Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclico's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclico Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. Welcome back to the show, Bob.
Yeah, hi, Jim. Friday, you know, always gives us a chance to get together, you and I, and also with our listeners. And hey, that's quite all right.
We have some listener questions today. Our first one comes from Rudy. Rudy sends to us a correction to my previous questions for Bob and Jim. I found out why there is no Trader Joe's stores in Canada. Trader Joe's lost a trademark litigation case with a Canadian company named Pirate Joe's. So thanks, Rudy, for solving that mystery for us. His question today, I would like to ask Bob what his opinion is of investing in consumer staples stocks as a defensive move in a slowing economy.
Yeah, this we want to be clear. By buying a defense stock, you're not buying a weapon stock. Stock that's going to be defensive in a bear market. And I know this for decades now, where you got fund managers, an equity fund manager, and he can't own anything other than equities. And then if you sell the client right out of equities in a bear market, then you might lose the client. So then in order to keep the clients on the list, you then have to keep them in equities. So you invent this sector called defensive. And the irony, and I've written it many times, is that they might go down slower in a bear market, but they're going to go down. So there's very few sectors that go up in a bear market. It just doesn't work that way. So, and we are in a post-bubble contraction, and it'd be a lengthy bear market. So I don't like the idea of trying to find defensive stocks that go down slower in a bear.
Some people have suggested that utilities might be a good place to go.
Yeah, that's another defensive group. My opinion is the same. Mm-hmm.
In other words, Bob, there's no such thing as a bulletproof stock.
No.
Our next question comes from Justin in Berkeley. Hi again, Jim and Bob. Looks like money supply is starting to implode. Attached is Mish Shedlock's article on the biggest collapse of M2 money supply since the 30s. What's M2, Bob?
Oh, that's, well, they've got M1, M2, M3. And MZ, but it is the one that is most commonly used.
I'm not a big fan of economic theory, nor should any sane person, according to their opinion, but this would appear to be a deflationary move in their classic terms. The velocity of money collapse would also signal this. Popular opinion is that the Fed created this new disaster, but really, according to Bob's past comments, they are just following private rates and circling the drain like everyone else. Are they just circling the drain?
I like circling the drain.
I like that, yeah.
Yeah, you can go back, to the 1873 bubble. I think I even did it for the 1825 in London when that was the financial center and Bank of England was the big poobah. And the action in interest rates is that short rates go up during a boom. And they go up until the boom is over, and then they go down. So what happens is that the central bank, in order to appear in charge, makes lots of noise about raising interest rates. and as if it's causing it, but it isn't. And this shows up because, like, for example, in 1929, the three-month Treasury bill increased strongly until June of 1929, and then it turned over. But you had, from December 1929, the committee that sets interest rates at the Fed was very concerned about the hyper-speculation in the stock market and wanted to tighten up that January. But they couldn't get a quorum in order to do it. So anyways, then, as I said, the stock market was doing its ups and downs and generally rising. And then in August, I guess some of the guys on the interest rate committee were away on holiday. So the old bears got the rise in interest rates. So August, the middle of August, they raised the discount rate from 5 to 6%. And but this is in the face of the months before in June that the T-bill rate was coming down, and that is a market rate of interest. So then the best for the New York Stock Exchange was set in early September, and by the end of September you had problems, liquidity problems, and then October was an absolute disaster. So at the end of October, the Fed lowered the discount rate, following the market by 4 or 5 months. That's the point to get across. So this is where now I got a close eye on either the 3 month or the 6 month Treasury bill. And yes, the technical excesses are there. It's been a tremendous increase in interest rates, but it's a very difficult one to call on the turn. So you just watch for the turn in the T-bill rate, and then maybe 2 or 3 months later, the Fed would find a reason to lower rates. So there's a whole cottage industry out there anticipating that what the Fed is going to do and for how long and everything else, and then also thinking that the result in interest rates is due to what the Fed's doing. And I've pointed out through three bubbles that is not the case. It's market forces of interest that set up the high in interest rates, and the Fed just has to go along with it. And here comes a more irony that's worth going on about, is that as the Fed has been supposedly raising short rates, they've raised them faster than long rates have been going up, so then you then have an inverted yield curve. And we've got the U.S. yield curve back to 1857, so through many, many business cycles. And the pattern is that if the curve inverts, you get a recession. Inevitable. And the other one is that if it's pretty dynamic as the inversion occurs, the more severe the recession will be. So here we are. The Fed is, if you want to look at it, if the Fed is being causative, the Fed is inverting the yield curve that causes a recession. No, we all know that they're responding just basically. They feel that they must raise rates in order to kill inflation, which is bugging the hell out of people. And no, I have nothing but condemnation for the Fed. And thanks very much for the question.
Bob, your next question comes from Jim, and I would like to know, would inflation disappear on its own? Because so many times I've heard the phrase, the cure for high prices is high prices. Would inflation disappear on its own without the Fed or the Bank of Canada hiking rates?
Yeah. It's because the central bankers caused the inflation.
Of course.
Now, let's go back. Yeah. Most of the 10 years, and we'll stay with what the Fed was doing, I said, the Fed gets this bee in its head that it has to have 2% inflation annually or something bad will happen. So you had, over the last decade, there are periods when you had 2% or slightly less. So then the Fed was easy with money supply, not understanding that a great financial bubble was underway, and all they were doing was throwing gasoline on the party. And so then they end up with the absurd position of trying to undo what they did. But this is not new. In the 1920s, you had First World War and a global shortages of commodities such that they went straight up and they blew out in 1920. And also with that rise in commodity prices in the United States, the rate of consumer price inflation reached, I think it was 23% annual, year over year. And then with the 1921 crash in commodities, the inflation rate went down to something minus 16. So then the Fed became riveted that there wasn't enough inflation. So it kept the pedal to the metal, and you had a very good bull market going on, and you had some strong business cycles from 1920 to 1929. But they didn't understand that a great financial bubble was due. So all of the money they were pouring into the markets to try and keep inflation up went into inflating stock prices. So the Fed this time around, sadly, showing that they haven't learned anything, did the same thing as they did in the 1920s.
Bob, long before the Fed was invented, didn't we have booms and busts? And they always settled themselves.
Yeah. Well, you went for, definitely the 1873 bubble. It was a global, like France and London and New York. New York was very much a lesser exchange then. And there was no central bank. Yeah. It was a national banking system sort of thing. No, the Treasury. The Treasury was kind of running things, but there was no central bank. So at the top of the party in New York, the Herald, a newspaper, editorialized that while the financial markets were buoyant, there would be no problem because unlike the Bank of England, which is constrained by gold, we have the Treasury system not on a gold standard. So therefore, the Secretary of the Treasury can issue any amounts of money and credit, and that would prevent a bear market and a recession. And the bear market lasted 5 years, and the depression lasted for 20 years. And in England, which was the senior economy, they eventually started calling it the Great Depression. That was from 1873 to 1895. So the record of central bankers is it's a terrible record. It's just awful. And I'm going to lay one more on them, Jim, because with the start of the U.S. Federal Reserve System, they couldn't call it a central bank. It was called the Federal Reserve System because most folks in the United States were fed up with the previous central bank. So anyway, so they called it the Federal Reserve System, and the powers that be then knew that if you had a financial crisis, it would be followed by a recession. So they then dreamt up the idea that the Federal Reserve, as the lender of last resort, would prevent the financial crisis. And therefore, there would be no recessions. And you can count them out. The one with COVID really doesn't count. But otherwise, there's 18 cyclical recessions. All you need is two to say that the theory doesn't work. And it doesn't work. So, and we've had the inverted yield curve with some excitement. So that does two things. The recession is inevitable, and because of the dynamics in the inversion, the recession will be severe. And that's all there is to it.
Bob, should banks be allowed to go bankrupt for making bad investment decisions as long as depositors are protected by depositor insurance?
Oh, yeah.
Do you think so?
Deposit insurance, wherever it's applied, it allows for bad banking. in Canada, we have a very sound banking system that has weathered many storms. And but then in the 70s, because the U.S. was putting in depositor insurance, they rammed it through in Canada. It was not needed. And then you end up with a whole bunch of fringe banks that are probably risky and probably won't survive, but they'll take a hit from this deposit insurance agency. So, no, Canada does not need deposit insurance.
We'll have more with Bob Hoy right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Bob Hoy. Bob, some of the headlines that caught your attention today. Japan warns of dire finances as the Bank of Japan struggles to contain yields. What's the story there?
Yeah, well, they're like most anywhere. The recent buyers of houses in a very strong market was done with much lower interest rates than now. And probably people were stretched to the limit on that one. And now you have rising mortgage rates making it extremely difficult. So obviously the Bank of Japan is trying to lower rates where they can, hopefully getting mortgage rates lower. But I think it's sort of a gesture more than a reality.
Headline, Bank of England warns insurers of ability to sell assets in a crisis. In other words, maybe they don't have enough backing to cover losses, even if they sold off stuff. Is that what that headline
means? You got to sell assets, mm-hmm. and there may not be a bid there. So it's always best to sell when you can rather than when you have to.
Headline, crypto firms acted like they were banks and then collapsed like dominoes. Why?
Yeah,
why did they collapse?
Good headline writer.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I was late in realizing that the crypto firms were acting like banks and financing other crypto firms and the whole crazy business. So, and then off it goes. Yeah.
Is that because the crypto people? I mean, banks at least, you know, have some investment in real estate and in businesses and so on through their loans. Cryptos would have none of those physical assets, would they?
Yeah. No. Cryptos would be all imaginary crypto things. So, yeah. But in Canada, the banks were not allowed to get into the mortgage business until around 1966. It was considered too scary for banks to get into. And then when they did come into it, God, it turned out to be a huge profitability for the banks. So.
Now, here we hear that another headline that caught your attention, Bob, was the Brits are paying more to charge their electric vehicles than they are to put a splash of petrol into the motor.
Yes. Very good, James. the tout on the electric cars was that the cost of charging them up was much less than the cost of running a car with gasoline or petrol. And that's not working out. And then you also got the huge cost of a battery. I mean, when you get a new battery for these things, it's like a maintenance service for a Ferrari. You know, you pay $20,000 or something like that for the battery. And
$10,000 pretty typically, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I was saying if you get an EV. Now, in England, electricity has never been what we would call affordable. I remember being at the aunt's house in London, and she continuously had to put a shilling into the power box or her lights would go out.
Oh, yeah. Now, that was some sort of a direct payment thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, if these, you know, the mid-engine Ferraris where the engine is not up front, just to do a routine change of the belts, you know, that run the alternator and all that sort of stuff, they have to take the engine out, and I think it's a $20,000 bill to change the belts and which is routine maintenance in a prairie.
Well, the more expensive the car, the more expensive the maintenance. Now, now here's a plus negative side here. Hilliard Macbeth, friend of the show that you've all heard before. Hilliard, several years ago, was complaining about the high maintenance cost for his Mercedes 4x4 truck. And I said, if you had an electric car, the only annual maintenance cost is having your batteries checked out and maybe check the brakes for wear. But the brakes don't wear much because they charge. They make electricity.
Yeah, they do the electric brake thing.
I said, so, and the only fluid you have to replace in it, you don't have to change any oil, is the windshield wiper fluid. And just the electrical charge is cheap. What I suggested is now pretend that you're still paying gasoline prices. Save that gasoline money so when you have to swap out your battery in 10 years, you have the money available. And the car itself, the chassis, shouldn't have much wear and tear on it because an electric car doesn't put the same stress on it because you have four wheels driving the car. So here's the plus minus of it. However, all those people in California who thought EVs were the way to go, they've been stranded because that state every summer has rolling blackouts.
Yep.
So the power grid already isn't robust enough to support electric cars in California. What about the rest of the world, Bob? Do we have enough transmission lines, enough generating stations if everybody went electric tomorrow?
Oh, no way. In, you know, the length of delay in charging is immense. So I saw somewhere a study, you know, nowadays in Vancouver, neighborhood service station takes up the corner of a block. Now, if you had to have a service station for electric cars, it would probably be a city block because you have to have so many stations because they got to hang around there for 2 or 3 hours. And it's just impractical. And the problem with electric cars is low-density battery. And they're at their best with these lithium batteries. And the problem there is that the even sitting still, the lithium sets up galvanic circuits and lays down its own dendritic circuit things, and they then short out. And then you have the problem of crashing, and if that harder outer shell gets cracked and water gets in, it's game over. And then last week I wrote down a headline about one of the major ferry shipping organizations in the Baltic, you know, Sweden and Denmark in that area. They have come out with a rule that no electric vehicles will be allowed on their ships. None. Zero.
Because
they are so dangerous.
Because lithium batteries like to overheat and burst into flames. And
they
burn.
They do it spontaneously, and they do it if they're assaulted, insulted. And then there was another one about a ship that had quite a few, this was a transport ship, shipping new cars somewhere. And within that, there were a number of electric ones, and one caught fire, another caught fire, all caught fire. They couldn't put it out, and in 5 days, the fire ruined the ship, and it sank.
Yes, apparently it takes at least 10 times more water to put out lithium battery fire than it does to put out a gasoline fire.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you can't dissipate it, you can't foam it. Foam, taking heat away from the flames, doesn't help because it's an internally sourced flame.
Yeah, it's all it is virtue signaling. You're not doing any emissions while you're driving, but it doesn't include all of the exotic metals that are mined and copper that's mined and all the stuff that's mined. So you got huge excavations in the ground downstream of this thing, backstream of this thing, and then if you want to run it powered by windmills and solar, you got even greater excavations. So any practical energy system, you're going to want to get more energy out of it than you put into getting it. And when you look at windmills and solar cells and electric cars, there's a huge amount of more energy goes in than you take out. But in the case of gasoline-run cars or diesel, you're getting more energy out than it costs to provide things. And also, it's on instant demand, whereas the electric car, I've read some of these stories about these guys trying to go cross-country. Two guys who get the same pickup truck, and they're towing the same weight on a small, modest trailer, and the electric truck just doesn't get it there at all. They've got to stop and wait, stop and wait. It's ridiculous. But the electronic, I think the whole thing's going to collapse, because when you're in a mania, like we've been in a financial mania, anything is possible, when it's promoted right, everybody believes the story, and then all of a sudden they wake up and realize that, hey, this is not really working. So I think the electric vehicles is going to crash, and I just did a study on the metal lithium carbonate. And it sort of went from a trough in 2021, maybe 150,000. Then the middle of November, it reached 600,000, and now it's at 450,000. So that's a big percentage drop, but it's at support. So we'll watch this, and if it takes out support, that means the game is over. But there's a whole list of lithium-related stocks, and they've been a disaster since last summer. So the market is telling you that the mania for electric cars has reached its best and is fading. So,
Bob, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Yeah, Jim, always good to be with you.
My guest has been market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. He was speaking to us from Vancouver. If you have any questions for Bob, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter @HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.